When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Holtcast. Cole Petum here as always, and of course we're here to talk all things Aston Villa Football Club with one of the most exhausting Villa games I have ever watched in my Villa fandom life, or probably sporting event life, or my life in general. I don't expect, this is a forewarning, I don't expect the next 20 minutes or so to make much sense. See, I can't even speak proper English there, but nonetheless, we're going to try to get through this one. Of course, we do have a different guest on because Simon is in Lille. I'm sure he'll get to bed within a few days after celebrating. Tom just returned from, I want to say, Iceland or something like that. So he's a little jet-lagged and exhausted from joining me. And of course, Seb is on a bender somewhere. So to fill in and save the day, we do have the wonderful Neil Dunworth from the For the Love of Paul McGraw podcast. I said that all correctly. Neil, take it away. How's it going?
Top of the world, Cole. Not many people will, like, there's a whole generation of fans that will, this will be their, me included, will be their first ever European semi-final. You know, I think somebody said to me there that it's like, well, it is, it's 42 years ago, 1982, last time we got, if you don't include the Intertoto Cup of 2003, I think somebody said. It's European semi-final, and my God, where we've come from the last 18 months. If you just remember back 18 months ago, Steven Gerrard saying that Chelsea should come to Villa Park and wipe the floor with us. And, you know, eating bread is soon forgotten usually. But with regards to this, that's one that's always stuck in my craw, because us as Villa fans have known we just needed to have somebody come in here that could right the ship, that could, you know, that could really kind of whip people into shape. And Unai Emery has done that. And 18 months later, we're in a European semi-final. We're on the cusp of getting Champions League football. We are the only English team left in bloody Europe at this stage. And to think back 18 months ago, and this isn't a going in hard and Steven Gerrard or anything. He's in the past, but it's just that phrase. 18 months ago, the consensus probably would have been that Chelsea should be coming to Villa Park and wiping the floor with us. And now we are going to a European semi-final, and we're within touching distance of Champions League. And whether we get Champions League or not is a completely different story for a completely different podcast. But you have to savor these moments. You just do. And I'm sure we'll get onto it. And the method of getting there was just utterly bonkers as well. So, you know, we're the lovable rogue, I think, in a lot of different competitions this season. And more often than not, you know, after tonight, I know that we won't have garnered an awful lot of fans, but I don't care, because we get this opportunity to experience this only a handful of times. And as I say, this is the first time in my lifetime I've ever experienced it. It's the first time in your lifetime. You need to be 42 or older to have been alive the last time this happened. So drink it in, is what I'm saying. Absolutely drink it in and see where this wild journey of the most successful season we've had as a football club in many's a year. And we really should be putting both our arms around this and Unai Emery and just giving it a massive hug.
Oh, absolutely. I still don't know how to fully summarize it and put it into words. Funny saying that, being a podcast host and recording a podcast right now, but it's one of those things. I mean, I can always think of the FA Cup final against Arsenal being the only opportunity for a trophy I've seen Villa get actually that. Well, sorry, twice. And they've lost both, the one against Man City a few years ago. I think I've just mentally blocked that one out from my memory. But of course, Villa in cup competitions traditionally hasn't been that great. You look at European football, it's been so long. I mean, people might kind of look at the playoff run and maybe throw that in there. Maybe that's a bit of a cop-out, but these moments do not come along very often. This, again, is the first time that we're witnessing it. So long may it continue. We should have you. Well, it looks like we're basically guaranteed European football for next year. Just give Unai Emery the key to the city already. Or the key to England or something. He's I don't know. I hope the semifinal, Neil, is not as stressful as what we had to go through tonight. Because, of course, just to kind of summarize things for those people that are listening, of course, Villa did technically lose 2-1 on the night in terms of a general scoreline. Of course, on aggregate, sorry, that was 3-all, but on penalties, of course, they pulled away 4-3 winners. And I mean, to start at the very end, because why put any order on this? Let's start with Emi Martinez. I mean, ultimate shithouse, man extraordinaire, savior of penalties. Try to summarize him, Neil, because I mean, I just love him so much.
He's unsummarizable, if you can, if that is such a word. He really is. And the reason I'll say that is that he plays to the beat of his own drum. He really does not care. And I love that because like the drama, like he courts the spotlight. And because he's as confident in his ability as anybody else in the whole entire world. More confident, should I say, than anybody else in the whole world. And sometimes when you're fucking good, there's a lot of times, there seems to be this unwritten numerata whereby when you're good, you have to be very humble. Oh, he has to be humble. Why? Because the people that aren't as good as him need to like him. Do you know what? Sometimes there have been people throughout the years who've just been, they've been good people, but man, have they been complete and utter pantomime villains. And he was that tonight, shushing the crowd. And then to be the guy who did save the penalty. Like, there's a big difference between when a player stands up and puts it wide or skies it. There's a massive difference between that and when a goalkeeper saves two penalties from two big players of theirs, And you have to give him a round of applause for that. There will be fans of other teams that will despise him. That's fine. That's their problem. There are fans of other players and other teams that I despise that they love. He's ours, and we need to, as I said before, the big thing is we need to appreciate these guys, and we need to back him, and we need to stand up for him. He said some beautiful things afterwards. He said he loves the club, number one. He could at any stage he could hand in a transfer request and be goalkeeper for, he could pick his club in the world. Like, he is arguably, he's in the conversation with probably Thibaut Courtois if he's fit, with Ederson and Alisson for the four best goalkeepers in the world, And there's probably the width of a cigarette paper between a lot of them. Like, all of them have different abilities and so on, but Martinez is just clutch. That's what he is. He is just clutch. And he's the spiritual leader of this team in Tyrone Mings' absence, and he's the grown up in the room. Not, and I mean that in a nice way. I mean that like he's like the father figure for this group. And the longer he stays at Aston Villa, the happier we're going to be because he's such a pivotal part of the team. So, big round of applause for Emi Martinez, the absolute. The he's like he's the guy that you love to have in your team and you hate if you're playing against him. That's and. Long, just loads of times where people have loved playing against our goalkeepers, believe me, because they knew that they were not very good. Now we have arguably the world's best, so bring it on. He's worth points, he's worth goals, he's worth trophies to this club, and I'm just delighted to have him.
Well, that's just the thing, isn't it, Neil? Some people might just look at stats and say, well, he doesn't have a crazy amount of clean sheets this season, this, that, and the other. But it's these moments. These are the moments that are the difference maker between being knocked out of a competition and staying in and moving on. That's why he was brought in for the fee that he was paid for. And I remember at the time, people were thinking, why did we pay so much for Emi Martinez? Arsenal, of course. I mean, that was quickly dismissed, but Arsenal fans are saying we've absolutely ripped them off here. That's brilliant. I mean, hindsight is a beautiful thing. And of course, he made
Inside,
the
yeah.
best of that within a few games, it really felt like. And we just haven't looked back. And you are right. I think of goalkeepers of the past. I mean, you can think of Brad Guzan, probably one of the first Villa goalkeepers that I can remember in my time supporting Villa. Let's be fair, had some good moments, but probably more of them being awful. The list does go on and on in terms of frustrations. You can go before that as well. But it's someone like him to stand up to try to get into other players, the opposition players' heads. I mean, that's someone, A, like you said, just does give zero shits, in which I love. And B, he's up for it. It doesn't scare him. And that's the biggest thing of why this club is where it is this season. Because of players like him that go in with no fear.
Well, you think about it. You just even have to look back to, and I know this isn't any, and you said this is going to be a rambling podcast of emotion, and I'm trying to be as level in my voice, because if anybody watched our podcast afterwards, I actually got really emotional, with regards to, because you stand waiting for something like this to happen, and then when it does, you're kind of going, shit, what am I supposed to do? But like even you go back to the weekend against Arsenal, like who came up with the big saves in the first half? Emi Martinez. And who's come up with the big saves all year? Yeah, you could say maybe once or twice he's passed the ball out to players, and we've conceded goals from it at the start of the year. And I used the phrase previously, eaten bread is soon forgotten with regards to that. And it's a case of we are now down the home straight, and this guy's winning us points, and he's keeping us in the hunt for trophies. You can't. It's unfathomable. Put a price on him. Okay, he's 30 years of age. When I hear people say put a price on him, someone like that, I don't care. He's priceless. He may go for 40 million. He may go for 50 million. He may go for 200 million. I don't know. If some Saudi club came in with 200 million, could we turn it down? I don't know. But what I'm saying is he's actually priceless to what he brings to this team. And there's a lot of players within this team that it's just this group. It's just this group, whatever buy-in they have, whatever kind of mental connection they have with each other, whatever kind of daisy chain of I suppose of simpatico that goes on within that dressing room, within that the character of that dressing room. There's a lot of them in there, and Emi Martinez is definitely top of the list in there as well, But it's very much like, and I dare and say it, and I know people will probably laugh at this, but you think back to Alex Ferguson when he grow a team and the team would be really good. And I always use Nicky Butt as an example for this. Not that Nicky Butt was bad after he left United, but when Nicky Butt was with Man United, he was absolutely outstanding. And then he goes to Newcastle, and he was good, but he wasn't as good because he got on with everybody in the dressing room. The dressing room was built around the collective. And that this Aston Villa dressing room is exactly the same. It's exactly the same. And there's figureheads within the collective, but they all know their role. And Emi Martinez, as I say, is that figurehead. And we're just so lucky to have him.
One thing I will say, and then we'll move on to the next talking point with Emi Martinez. For me, at least, and some people might think I'm deluded, especially if it's an opposition fan or someone who couldn't give two cares less about Villa. But when I'm hopefully 80, I can look back and say, like, I remember him. That was my goalkeeper. And that's one of the things that sticks with you. And I can't have said that before, Emi Martinez, in terms of Villa. And I'll be completely honest with that. I mean, I love Jed Steer and what he did in the promotion push. But I mean, in terms of longevity and since he's come to the club, it's been nothing but amazing things. I mean, I think we have to be fair, Neil. We're very fortunate to say that Villa have won this game, and it went to extra time and it went to penalties. I mean, kind of run me through how you're feeling through. I mean, again, this is probably just going to be an emotional podcast at this point, and I'm fine with that. But I mean, through normal time, how are you kind of feeling about it? Were you assuming it would be maybe a little bit too little too late when Villa, of course, were starting to push after that second goal? Just let it go. I'll be your
It's weird.
therapist.
It's weird, Cole. I never lost it during the game. Even when we went 1-0 down, I was like, okay, that's fine. This has happened. This is a character test of the team. Are they going to go out? Are they going to go out with a whimper? And then we got 2-0 down. And I'm like, this is not ideal. But at the end of the day, we only need one goal. And I was very, very fortunate to be able to watch this with my dad again. And we were watching the game, and I kind of said, we just need one goal. We just need one. And we didn't look like we were going to get it. This was me being over-optimistic. And then, of course, you're in, what, the 82nd? When did Matty Cash score? I can't remember even what minute he scored in. But, you get to this point and you're like, Jesus, I don't know. Are we going to win? I don't know. Are we going to get the goal? And our goal was fortuitous. But I think after we got the goal, barring a couple of corners that came in at the end, after we got the goal, we looked a lot more together. It looked like it snapped us up, and it looked like it gave us that kind of that brass ring to reach for. I thought we were much better in extra time, save for a couple of minutes towards the end of extra time. And obviously we had the mentality to step up and to take penalties and to score more than them. And look, I know Leon Bailey missed his penalty, but I thought it was in the corner. I thought it was just a really, really good save from, I'll tell you something. Lucas Chevalier is a good, good goalkeeper. A very good goalkeeper. Very good goalkeeper. He did some really good things tonight. Yes, he dropped the ball when he collided with his man, but you know, that happens to everyone. We saw Martinez do it at the start of the game as well, and he just gets his hand down to claw it away from I think it might have been Jonathan David afterwards, you know. So them's the breaks, kind of. So no goalkeeper is immune to that, but he's a good goalkeeper. And yeah, as I said, through the whole lot of the game, I was nervous. But I don't know, this team has always, bar the two Newcastle games and Liverpool game, his team has always kind of dug deep and found things. You know, you talk about Sheffield United, late goal to draw against Sheffield United. You talk about Ollie Watkins' goal recently against Brentford. You think of the goal against Mostar. The team has done it like this before. You know, we've done it the hard way. We've gotten a dirty result when we didn't deserve it. And we did it again tonight. And that's character. And that comes from the top man. That comes from Mr. Emery. Really does.
Yeah, it's one of those things you sit back and, I mean, maybe arrogantly, we can say that maybe Unai Emery planned this, and fair enough. But you also kind of have to look at it and think, I mean, as soon as that went in, you just knew they had that control. And having that control was the most important thing. And again, to reiterate what you said, I mean, it's crazy to say because the first 90 was so awful, but literally throughout extra time, full confidence in the fact that Villa didn't win it in extra time. That double save that the little keeper made was marvelous. And that was the difference maker for them. So the theme of goalkeepers prevails in this conversation. But I mean, it is one of those things where you do sit back and you look at it and you can say missed opportunities for Lille, 100%. But Villa did have their opportunities. Like, I'm even looking at the stats now, and I don't really understand where we had even 48% possession or 9 shot attempts with 7 on target. I generally don't remember where half those came from. I don't know where I was mentally to even recollect that throughout this whole thing, but apparently it did happen. The one player I do want to talk about, and I think it's important because he just came back from injury. I think Matty Cash missed around 5 games while being out, coming into the second leg of an important quarterfinal away in France. First time for him in his professional career. Being completely honest, he did struggle and did have some struggles throughout. But coming up clutch twice, scoring the goal, of course, it was fortuitous. We can all agree with that. But have the composure still to be able to hit it, put it on target, fair enough. Stepped up for his penalty, no fear, precision, right in the back of the net. I mean, Neilian, for a moment here, what did you make of not even just his performance, but kind of, it's almost like he had a redemption arc within one game, didn't he?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yeah, how am I going to put this? Because like, realistically,
I've thrown you in a tough spot.
No, you haven't. But for me, it's a case of I didn't think he was bad today. I didn't. And I thought there was a lot of people jumping. Like there always needs to be somebody, I suppose, sometimes, that when things aren't going right, that we can point to. It used to be the manager for years. And everybody's completely free. Don't get me wrong. If there's anybody listening to this that thinks Matty Cash was absolutely shocking, like, I'm not telling you that you're wrong. This isn't it. I'm just answering the question I was asked. I personally didn't think he was that bad. I thought the team was disjointed, and I thought maybe him coming in was the reason why the team was disjointed, but I didn't think he was actually really bad. He was the only person that had shots for us in normal time, essentially. Bar, I think, Duran. Well, that was actually in extra time when Duran had one saved, brilliant save by the goalkeeper. But Matty Cash fluffed one in the first half where he went to kind of, I think, chip the goalkeeper. And then he hits the side netting in the second half, early on in the second half, if I'm not mistaken, or it might have been late in the first half. And then he warms the goalkeeper's hands with an absolute rasper that goes out for a corner. And then he scores the goal. And yes, he wasn't perfect. I'm not saying he was perfect at all, but also I thought Youri Tielemans wasn't perfect. I thought John McGinn wasn't perfect. I thought Douglas Luiz wasn't perfect. So I just think he was just the easy target. And that's fine. If people are more vehement with regards to that, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I didn't pick up on him being the worst Aston Villa player on the field, like some other people did. But as you say, we're damn glad of him now, because not only did he put it in the back of the net when we needed it to bring us to extra time, he put it in the back of the net in the penalty shootout. That man has balls the size of space hoppers, because, like, if we're talking about somebody who doesn't believe in their own ability, like we spoke about Amy Martinez believes in his ability, Matty Cash must believe in his ability, because, like, he knows that he's not a mainstay in this team. He knows that at any minute, Emerson Kanzi could be pushed out the right back and Diego Carlos could be put in at centre half. That's probably what's going to happen at the weekend. But Matty Cash grabbed his opportunity with both hands today. And a lot of people would talk about Douglas Luiz's penalty. A lot of people would talk about the penalties that went before. But Matty Cash stood up. And I don't think a lot of people would have put Matty Cash in their bingo card for penalty taker. So fair play to Matty Cash. And we do owe him, as you said, his redemption arc was swift. But I didn't even need to have him on a defensive and a redemption arc, if that makes sense. But hopefully this is something that will allow him to kick on, because he's not been as good this year as he has been in other years. But then again, this year he scored goals, which is different than what he's done in other years. So there's swings and roundabouts with him, and injuries don't help. But Matty Cash for me is fine. He's fine. But if other people think that he's a poor player, that's cool. Put it this way, it's not something where I get into a screaming match with somebody over. My opinion of Matty Cash isn't worth that much. Now, if it was Emi Martinez we were talking about, I'd get into a screaming match with somebody over that. But, you know, as I said, for me, it's just, I didn't feel he was the worst player in the field today.
No, that is fair. The thing I look at with
Cole, I'm so sorry. This isn't live, so I don't know why I'm doing this, but Olympiacos are just after going 3-1 up in penalties against Fenerbahce. It's gone to penalties, and Olympiacos are 3-1 up on penalties. So there we go. 3-2 now on penalties. Fenerbahce just scored their last penalty. So it looks like if Olympiacos score their next penalty, Villa fans will be going to Greece.
Well, there we go. We can plan a pre-trip, hopefully, to Greece to get us hopefully ready for the final. But the one thing I did want to say on Matty Cash very quickly, you are right. And again, it's an easy thing to be the scapegoat in any particular game. There's always one player for every game. Villa could still win 10-0, and there would still be someone maybe saying, I don't know, the 11th player didn't score something. I don't know. But anyways, in regards to that, you do sit back and you look at it and you think, we need those bit part players. And again, that's one of those things when you look at the cog in a successful team, in a running, operating, well-oiled machine, you need those bit part players. And of course, he hasn't played as much as he has in previous seasons. But like you said so correctly, Neil, he's scoring goals, he's contributing. It's moments like this. And the same thing we said with Emi Martinez. I mean, it shouldn't matter, especially in an Unai Emery system, how much or how little you play. If you're contributing, that's all that matters. It doesn't matter who's scoring all the goals. I could honestly give two craps about it. But if Villa are winning, that's the most important thing. I mean, I guess we'll figure out who the winner of Fenerbahce Olympiacos will be here probably in the next minute. So maybe we'll discuss that for a few moments before we wrap this one up. But we'll chat a little bit about Bournemouth, because I know you're going over to Birmingham. You'll be at the game. You have a live show that you'll have no sleep prior to. So, I mean, what are you expecting from Sunday, given how down to the wire this one went? We're going to probably have to expect a little bit of tweaking in rotation. I think that's only natural at this point in time. But where does it all kind of sit with you?
I just hope the guys are back in Birmingham before I get over there at 7:30 a.m. tomorrow morning, because I think that they would have been got into the dressing room, lads, have a quick shower on the coach, get out of Dodge as quick as possible. I think that that's the order of the day. They're going to need every single minute of rest and recuperation and physio work tomorrow. Like, that's the elephant in the room, Cole, that you mentioned there. Extra time wasn't ideal for us. We didn't need extra time tonight, obviously. No team ever needs extra time. We certainly didn't need it. We've a lot of minutes played and we've got a small squad to rotate through. So when we think about Bournemouth, who are a hefty adversary, you know, you look at their form guide recently, it's bloody good. And they've got a really good manager. A manager I was really impressed with that they were able to entice, to be honest with you. I thought that he would get a plum job in Spain, but he's backed himself to come to the Premier League. And he obviously sees a great project there at Bournemouth, which looks to be a good project as well. A lot of fingers were wagged at Gary O'Neill losing his job losing the job there previously. But, you know, this guy's come in, he's done a really good job. I think, yeah, like there's a lot of players, like Leon Bailey having a heavily strapped knee. Douglas Luiz obviously isn't available for this game. But Yuri Tielemans, who is a guy we know does start to blow black smoke at times, you know, in games, he had to play 120 minutes. And Olympiacos have just qualified for the semi-finals. By the way, it's going to be Villa versus Olympiacos in the semi-final. So yeah, there's a couple of players there. I think like Ollie Watkins looked leggy towards the end. He was pushed out to the wing when John Duran came on. So I don't know what type of rotation that Unai Emery is going to use. I think he goes hell for leather for this one at the weekend. But can the players give it again? You know, it'll be the fourth game in my rudimentary maths, fourth game in 10 days, fourth game in 11 days, I think.
Yes,
it is.
I believe so, yeah.
So that seems like a lot, but maybe we're wrong on that, so anyone can pick us up on that one. But like, that's a lot for a squad that's relying on essentially 17, 18 players, you know, through the course of the whole season. But that's my pragmatic hat on. My me being at the game hat is Villa 12-0. That's my me being in the game hat, because I'm looking forward to it no end. I've got a beautiful plum seat right in the upper Trinity that I love. I get a similar seat all the time every time I go, and I just love watching it from there. Obviously, I've been to the Holt, but I love watching it from there so that I love seeing the tactical makeup, I suppose, and yeah. You can see the whole field because I'm pretty much in the halfway line, so it's great. So I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm looking forward to seeing the mister on the sideline. I'm looking forward to seeing Pau Torres dictated from behind from the back in person, and I'm looking forward to seeing Emi Martinez again in person. So I think Bournemouth is one that we should target at the weekend, but it's all about getting the recuperation in tomorrow and the massage work or whatever else needs to be done.
Absolutely. If they need to hire a few other massage therapists or whatever to get that whole squad ready in time, do what you will. I mean, it's not the end of the world, of course, because once the Bournemouth game is done, Villa don't play again until the following Saturday. So it's not like there's another midweek clash to worry about. There's actually a little bit longer of a rest. So again, with what you've even said there, Neil, I could see Unai Emery going a little bit more heftier than I maybe would have originally thought of in terms of squad power on this one, but we'll have to wait and see. And the last thing, I mean, we can really talk about here now is Olympiacos, like you've mentioned a few times. Now we will play them. Villa will travel to Greece. I mean, what are you kind of expecting with this one in your head? Because I think they've had a very tricky tie. There's no secret. They've went the distance as well. But for me, I think it's anybody's game.
It is, but I will say one thing. The Olympiacos have targeted European football this year with regards to, they've made some pretty decent signings. The guy that owns them is also the owner of Nottingham Forest as well. So, you know, anything could happen at that club. And we know his propensity to just splashing the cash and spending money. It's going to be tough. Like, it's going to be a raucous atmosphere when you go away to Olympiacos. You know, like, they've brought in, like, they've got some pretty decent players there. You know, some of them are old, but some of them are like they're obviously very 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 competent players. Like they signed a guy on loan from Porto called David Carmo, a center half. He's a really, really good player. They also have they've also got Daniel Podence from Wolves is in there as well.
Omar Richards on loan.
Yeah, Jovetic, exactly. Omar Richards from on loan from Forest as well. Andre Orta on loan from Braga as well, just like an assist machine inside there. They've got, as I say, they've got a lot of old heads in there. Like their midfield could be Vincent Deboura, like he's 36 years of age. Yeah, like they're a bit of an aging team, but they're very competent. Obviously, they're in the European semi final, and they're a team that are going to want to go all out to win it. Their manager as well, Mendilibar. You know, he's been around a good bit. He obviously had the Sevilla connections from last year as well. You know, he's coaching an awful lot at some big teams in Spain too. So these are obviously no mugs. They're in a European semi final, and they will be given the utmost respect from probably everybody, bar Emi Martinez, if we get to a penalty shootout. But apart from that, they'll be given the utmost respect, and it will be tough to go to their ground because you talk about partisan atmospheres. Greek football is about as partisan as you can get. So yeah, it's going to be another big night for these players. They've been to a couple of grounds like that. Obviously, Legia, as it is, no cakewalk either to go to the Amsterdam Arena as well. And tonight certainly wasn't. I thought their fans were amazing tonight. The singing and chanting was just so loud on TV. And it's all character building for the players as well from that point of view.
Yeah, the one thing on tonight I did found odd, I don't know if you saw it as well, Neil. It was post-match, and I think it was a group of Lille fans next to some Villa fans. And one or two of them had Birmingham City. Not flags, scarves. And I thought that's very odd considering you've lost. And well, enough said about that other team as well. But I mean, you are right when you look at Olympiacos. They're a very wily, veteran, experienced team. And I think that's what we have to expect. It's going to probably be more physical in some ways, more than others compared to other sides. And when you look at it, I mean, it's crazy to even see someone, in my opinion, like Stefan Jovetic in there. That now that he's 34, I mean, I'm only 29, but that makes me, knowing that he's 34, feel even older than I am for some odd reason. But it is going to be extremely difficult, and the atmosphere is going to add to that. But, and like you said as well, I think with the different diverse atmospheres that have been experienced in Europe this season, I think it benefits Villa this season and beyond. And I think that's the best thing. Hopefully it's Champions League next season. Let's all hope for that. I think that's clearly obvious, but whatever it is next season, I think it puts us in good stead. And Neil, I'll ask you one more question, because I don't know if I'll talk to you before the two semifinal legs are over. Are Villa going back to Greece after the semifinals?
Yeah, why not? If tonight can happen, bloody anything can happen in this in this competition. I don't even know when these games are on. I'm going to Google it just so that we can talk about it, because I have no idea when these the next round of this is on. 2nd of May.
May
2nd and May 9th. Yeah, so where do Aston Villa where do those fixtures fall in Aston Villa's calendar? Not that I'm overthinking this.
Between Brighton.
So yes, is what I'm going to say. Villa are going to the Conference League final. Villa are going to beat Bournemouth at the weekend. It's going to be a tough ask, but they're going to do it. Villa are going to draw at least against Chelsea on Saturday the 27th of April. And Villa are going to beat Palace in the last day of the season. But in between that, Villa will beat Olympiacos over two legs. And Villa are going to go to Athens, and Villa are going to go to the Champions League. I'm a believer, as Emi Martinez says.
I think they're doing the exact same thing. And I just came up with something else that I quickly want to ask you as well. If, and again, I don't want to jinx anything, but if Villa do win the Conference League and they do finish fourth, is that arguably the most, aside from the 1982 season, the second most, maybe I guess you could say, successful season in Villa's history? Is that a good argument?
What I would say is nothing will ever, like, and I wasn't there, but like nothing for Aston Villa Football Club until, I don't think anything will ever eclipse 1982. And the reason being is to win it in 1981 and 1982, that era, because to win it with, you know, just 14 players, number one, and to be in a competition where only champions get in and it's knockout and there's no second chances and there's no group stages, it's a phenomenal achievement. Phenomenal achievement. And if I'm not mistaken, Villa were the last to win it in that format. So that will never be defeated. So I suppose realistically, what you would say, if Aston Villa of the modern era are having the best season they have ever had. People might talk about finishing second in more recent times as well, you know, in the first year in the Premier League and so on. I'd argue that the way competitions have gone now and the fact that Villa are playing on two fronts, that this has been the most fulfilling Aston Villa season so far. And we don't even know how much more fulfilling it can get. And to answer your question, to win a European trophy and to get into the Champions League would be nothing short of miracle territory from where we were. And to tie a bow on it from what I started the podcast with 18 months ago, I've been told that Chelsea should come to Villa Park and wipe the floor with us. To win a European trophy and to get Champions League football would be nothing short of absolute fairy tale stuff. And I'm so here for it. And why can't fairy tales happen to us? If they can happen to other clubs, why can't they happen to us?
Absolutely. And I know you did say at one point during this chat, Neil, that you were getting emotional on your podcast. I'll be completely honest. If Villa do get in the top four, and especially if they win a cup, I'm going to cry. I do not care what people think about that. It's we all deserve it, and that's all I can say on that one. But thank you very much to Mr. Neil Dunworth for joining me. And before we do wrap things up, Neil, why don't you go ahead and plug whatever the heck you want to plug?
Yeah, it's as simple as this. We're the only podcast called For the Love of Paul McGrath. So if you type it into anywhere you watch podcasts, you're going to find us, whether it's on YouTube or any of the audio platforms. And look, if there's anybody around Birmingham that wants to come for a bit of an ease up with Villa fans tomorrow night, the Aston Inn is the place to be. Doors are open at 5 o'clock. 6:45 we get going. You can pay in on the doors, £15 in the door. We get going at 6:45. We've got Tony Morley and Gary Thompson and Mark. They're two former players, obviously, talking about 1982, coming to the event. We also have Mark Regan, the former voice of Villa on BBC West Midlands. We've Justin Hawthorne from the Up to Villa podcast, and we've Ty Bracey as well coming to have a chat, plus a couple of more other people on the night that will pop up and chat to us. So it's going to be basically from 6:45 until whatever time they kick us out tomorrow night, and that's the 19th of April in Birmingham. If you fancy coming along for knees up, please do. We'd be delighted to have you. But apart from that, listen, look, as a group of Villa podcasters and as a group of Villa fans and as a group of everything else, just as I said before, put your arms around each other. We're in this together and it's a bloody good season. And people will tell us we're lucky and people will tell us we don't deserve to be where we are. And people will pat us in the head like the patronizing patronizing uncle at a wedding and go, aren't you getting very tall and stuff like that? Who cares? Fuck them is what I say. We're here on merit. We're here because we've got one of the best managers in world football and we've got a bloody good crop of players. And all that's left to say for me then is just like embrace it and drink it in.
Absolutely. Well, live for the moment. Enjoy the moment. I'm not even going to bother doing our usual outro. We'll leave it there. And we will be back, of course, after Bournemouth on Sunday. I almost forgot who we're playing. But regardless of that, and don't forget, up the Villa. We're going up. We're going up.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.